Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey there, loyal steamers. Welcome to a special edition of the Steam Room presented by Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. I am your host, Ernie Johnson, and tonight, the inside story presented by Kia will continue on TNT. It's a four-part docuseries, explores over 30 years of inside the NBA. And on our staff, Audrey Martin, Peter Dennis, and Leroy Williams, Deaton Bell, Drew Watkins. It's just a spectacular docuseries. Such hard work went into it, so I encourage you to check it out. But along those lines, a few years ago, I sat down with Tim Kiley, of course, our legendary longtime producer of Inside the NBA, to look back at how it all began. And our conversation that day turned into a sort of oral history of the show. So to celebrate the documentary's premiere, we thought we'd release that conversation, me and TK, right here. Hope you enjoy it.
Okay, so I think if you just start by introducing yourself, and then how did this all begin? How did you meet each other? Who was here first?
I'm Tim Kiley, producer, or fat ass boss, as Chuck calls me, but I'm the producer of Inside the NBA.
I'm Ernie Johnson. I'm the host of Inside the NBA.
Or I was the producer of Inside the NBA.
Now he's the overseer of Inside the NBA.
Exactly.
Yeah. He used to be until they heard this podcast.
EJ was first, so he's up.
All right. I have been doing the show for a long, long, long time. And I was here before Tim was here. But the show didn't really become the show until Tim got here. I mean, I have to go back to 1989. I came to Turner from the ABC station in Atlanta, WSB, and really didn't know that I'd be doing the NBA studio. I was hired to be the host of a show called U.S. Olympic Gold, which was the Turner version of Wide World of Sports. And I did that. I also sat out a six-month no-compete clause that I was held to by my former employer.
Big time there. Yeah, it's big time when they hold you that.
Because even though I was coming over to coming to what was not a competitive situation, they said I had to sit out. And there had been talk too. I said you'll do some NBA stuff, but TNT wasn't even on the air yet. And so I sat out my six-month no-compete. I did a little reporting that season while Craig Sager, was the studio host.
For that story, let's go to Ernie Johnson at the Palace. Ernie?
Thank you very much, Craig Sager. What a great New York Knicks team that was in 69-70 that beat the Lakers in seven games.
And then for the 90-91 season, that's when Don McGuire told me that I would be sitting in the chair and hosting the NBA on TNT. As TNT began its first year.
Opening night of the NBA season. That's going to do it for Inside the NBA. For this trio, I'm Ernie Johnson. We're back at you Tuesday night with more NBA on TNT. Tuesday night. We'll see you then.
I mean, I wish I could remember everything about that. I think there were some nights I was doing the show solo, but our big initiative back then was that when the playoffs started, then we'd have guests come in. And so we had Charles Barkley came in,
Chuck Daly, Isaiah Thomas. We had basically anybody.
Jack, there's a picture of you and Jack.
A couple of years later. Yeah. But that's really when we had people come in to work with me was during the playoffs, and it was, you know, teams that had been eliminated or teams that didn't make the playoffs, and their coach would come in for two or three nights and that kind of thing. And that's kind of where it all started. And then eventually it was, okay, you'll work with Cheryl Miller. And you'll work with Dick Versace and Reggie Theus and
Reggie Theus
and and the show was fun, but it wasn't what it is. It hardly resembles what we do now because it was really just highlight driven.
When we gave you extra time, we saved the highlights for segment two, and by golly, here they come.
On those nights, a lot of times there'd be 10 games going on, and so you'd get all the highlights in, and that's what halftime would be. Here are a couple of highlights. Here's a score. Take a break. Here's another highlight. We'll be back after the game. And sometimes after the game was really quick, you know, depending on what time it was and top of the hour. Okay, we only have time for three highlights. Knock them out, and you're done. And then things began to change. I mean, TK, you got here in
95.
So, yeah, I'd been here. 1991, 1990. So, yeah, I've been doing it about 4 or 5 years when you got here. Mm. Did you watch the show
from your perch on ESPN? No, I did. You know, you had to watch everything at ESPN. Ernie and I share a local news background, which was a big deal to us because we've always told funny stories. And when I tell you—
And we learned.
We did. We learned the hard way and the good way, but— we're both convinced that as good as Ron Burgundy was, we could have done a better movie with our stories. So that was something we shared. But it was funny. I grew up in local TV, you know, worked about 8 years in Pittsburgh, worked for two or three cable companies that went under and couldn't get out of ESPN fast enough just because it was such a difficult place to work. And I was newly married and I hardly saw my wife. And so I ended up getting this phone call. Bob Lee from SportsCenter, who's one of the nicest guys on the face of the earth, came to me and said, I would hate to see you leave, but I hear there's an opening at Turner. And they had just made a changeover with management, and Mike Pearl came in, and Harvey Schiller, and all these people. So there was this big talk of there being an opportunity. And I'm like, I'm ready to go. But I hated the regimen. I hated the regimen of, like Ernie said, the word time at the end of the night. I always hated that everything was kept to time. I had a local TV producer or a news director tell me nothing, no piece, nothing in the show could be longer than a minute and a half. He said, I could do the goddamn resurrection, do the story in a minute and a half, which Ernie knows well because he had to do 1,000 minute and a half reports, no matter whether it was the cat in the tree or the school council hearing. And I hated that because it was so constraining. You know, I always felt like, why does everything have to be a half hour or on a button or, you know, and now it's funny. I look at Game of Thrones and all the shows that are streamed and they're 63 minutes or they're 48 minutes, you know, but we were always 22 minutes and four commercials and get the hell out of there. So it really was kind of weird to me that I was like, if a discussion's good, why not let it go? So we got here and I actually started doing football first, and Ernie was out on the field, so I didn't get to see him much.
Yeah, my roles on that NFL varied from in the studio.
But I don't think we really bumped into each other until the first following NBA season when I started to do the NBA. So I had seen Ernie do stuff, and I always found him to be really funny, like when he was ad-libbing. And when I would talk to him in person and we'd share these stories about, you know, the time when the light crashed on my head when I was live in local TV, we would laugh, you know, and talk about how funny this was and that was. So he had this real wicked sense of humor. But every time we did a show, I always felt like, you know, he was trained like we all are. It's like classically trained piano. And then you get to go play jazz, right? He was trained to script like we all were, you know, and to be on time and to hit this thing and to write your best stuff and all that other stuff. And I always felt like I hated that kind of TV because, you know, like I felt like we were ready to play jazz, you know, like just everybody do your thing. And there was a great knock, and Cosell started it, actually, about the jocks, the dumb jocks being in the booth, and they shouldn't be in the booth. And I was like, well, these are the guys that can actually tell you what, more than just the X's and O's, which I think a lot of people like, but what people really like is when you tell them some story about what was it like to be in the locker room, or what was it like when this happened or that happened. That, to me, was the essence of what I was trying to get at when I was thinking of it. So the famous story, as Ernie's told millions of times, was I kept saying, Ernie, write less, and, you know, and he would kind of smile and, you know, go ahead. And I just said one night, shut off prompter, so I shut it off. Something like that, and we
the stories vary, but what I recall from that night was that I used to like to have a look at the highlights before they ran. All right, there was no, you know, and we were able to do that a lot of times, and you know, somebody would run the shot sheet out, they'd play the highlight, I'd look at it. This is while the game's going on as we're getting ready for post game. And so I would have had a look at all the, you know, all that we're going to do in the post game show, and this particular night, a lot of the stuff was coming in late. Now that I know TK, it's you know, I'm not surprised that he wasn't on the PL to all of his crew saying, "Don't bring those highlights out yet. You know, we're going to break this guy of his of this need to always see everything before it airs." And see, what he also talks about is, in those days, a lot of times I'm doing the show by myself, and I would say something that I thought was kind of funny, you know, or I'd write a line here, you know, in the lead into something that's, you know, that I thought was clever and people might chuckle at it, but you never knew because you weren't playing off of anybody. Mm-hmm. And the studio crew, it was just the old style, hold the camera and don't show any emotion, don't look around, you know, you don't even know they're there. Last thing you want to do is laugh and you might be heard on the air. So you never knew if a line was good or if it was stupid or anything like that. So anyway, getting back to that night, so we have this post-game show that's an absolute, an abomination, you know, that's... There were highlights run out of order. This was supposed to be before that. I hadn't seen it yet. I'm kind of stumbling over it. I'm absolutely steaming as I'm sitting out there. And I'm like, I got to go after somebody when this thing is all over because again, you feel like, well, this may be the last show I ever did. This may be it. And so Tim and I had a discussion afterwards.
Well, I came downstairs because I knew he was boiling, and I had intentionally, because I knew he knew the game so well and had his arms around the entire league, so I could hand him, I felt like I could hand him, just like I could have Charles Barkley. All I have to say to Charles Barkley is Michael Jordan, and he can probably give me 5 good minutes on Michael Jordan, right? I knew if I gave Ernie just a working manuscript, he might wing it, and I know we could wing it, and he doesn't need to know who these guys are because he knows who they are. You know, he doesn't need that help, and I just felt like that was addictive and holding him back because he had this wicked sense of humor. But the first night was giving birth.
A couple of plays to show you from later in that game as Clyde Drexler takes it to the hole. Donyell Marshall of Golden State, the well-traveled Donyell Marshall, going to get a hold of this thing. I'm kind of leading you along, just building the suspense.
So I came downstairs knowing he was really pissed at me, and I walked in, and it was this old building with a bunch of snaky hallways, and he was boiling, and I kept saying, EJ, I'm just trying to, and he went into the bathroom, and I'm like, I can't exactly go into the bathroom with him. And then I heard this smash. He had busted a coffee cup against the wall, and some poor guy, I think, was in there going to the bathroom.
Hey,
you know, so I went, I guess this discussion's over, and I went to the mall the next day with my wife.
And we actually did have a discussion.
Yes,
amidst all that, yeah, amidst yeah. all of the, Yeah, but that's not what I like to see it. That I want to see the highlights. I want to be prepared. I think, you know, but we need to be on top of stuff. We can't just do a highlight that we cut 20 minutes earlier and then ignore what happened. And so we're going, and I saw his point, and he was coming from ESPN, and they're like, hey, highlights got to be right here. Here's the latest and greatest. We've got to show this jumper, even though you haven't seen it. Live with it. And so it was making sense to me, but I was still boiling about just having a terrible show. And so that led me to take the NBA on TNT cup and zing it in that bathroom. And it, you know, porcelain cup like that, it smashed it into about 8 billion pieces. And then the poor guy sitting in there is like, hey, somebody's in here. Sorry about that. Later. And so I left. I mean, it's just like, yeah, TK, we'll see you tomorrow, because we were doing games.
Yeah, Tuesday, every night.
Tuesday, yeah. Wednesday, Thursday. And so there was a very short turnaround time. So I'm driving home like, oh, great. And I get to do this with this guy again tomorrow night. Wonderful.
So what'd you get at the mall?
I bought a cup. And I Ernie still has it, that says going postal.
It's a white cup that has what looks like a want ad on it. It looks like it's, yeah, you know, cut out of the newspapers. And in this, on this whole black and white thing, there's a red square around this thing that says postal worker needed, because I had gone postal that night in the studio.
Well, you still have it?
Oh yeah. I mean, I walked into my office and I see, what is this? There's a box here or something. I open it up and all I could do was just howl. And I just went in and saw him. I said, you're the best. I said, that's genius right there. And I said, and then I apologized. I said, look, I was out of control last night. And I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. And so, you know, we're going to work together. We need to work together. And I was in the wrong, you know, guys, that was, you know, it was out of control. For him to diffuse it that way, it means so much that through every office move we've had and everything else, there's always got to be a place for that cup. And it's right there in my office.
Background you were talking about, did you set out to make Inside the NBA the way it is, or was it?
Yeah, well, we started to go a little bit more freeform. And, you know, I told Ernie, I said, Ege, you know, I don't think you need to write as much, because it all comes out of your head. You know, all that time he spends in, you know, and he really does, whether it's a 2-game night or a 15-game night, he's got a mind like a trap, you know, where mine doesn't work that way. I'm a space cadet. I can't even remember what – I remember walking out of 1,000 sports centers or 1,000 of our shows, and somebody would say, who won? I don't know. You know, I just did the show, encouraging, you know, more of a conversational type thing.
Yeah, because it helped too, because at this point now we're getting into a – there's always going to be an analyst in the studio.
Right.
So there's going
right,
to be a,
right.
So there's going to be
Reggie
a Shira Miller.
And Cheryl and Dick.
Dick Versace and whoever else.
The key, you know, and I don't know if you agree, Ernie, the fire starter was Kenny.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, people don't give Kenny enough credit. He's a pain in the ass. I'll say that loudly and proudly. He's going to be late to his own funeral. But when he showed up, those were the days we would bring a guy in for like 3 or 4 nights. Like Ernie said, it would be sort of an experiment. Maybe this guy will be good. And Kenny was at the end of his career and he had bad knees and he kept trying to come back with teams.
He was signing a series of 10-day contracts.
Yeah, exactly. And he came in because one of our bosses, Michael Jackson, was a friend of his. Michael Jackson had played guard at Georgetown with Patrick and those teams.
And they were,
you know, Kenny Smith,
Sacramento
yeah,
Kings together.
Yeah, they were on the Kings together. And there were, you know, Kenny Smith would not have been on either of our lists for someone that we would have wanted to come in, because of course you're looking for the big name. But in comes Kenny, and he and Ernie just click, right? And like Kenny doesn't pay attention to any of the shit that we try. Like, he's not looking at cameras. He's talking right to Ernie. I'm getting yelled. Lenny Daniels was directing, our boss. He was the director, and he used to get mad and say, get Kenny to look at camera 3. And I'd say, listen to what he's saying. I don't care where he's looking. The person at home doesn't care. So we had a fight about that. And he eventually let it go, you know, because directors were told camera 3 because they wanted you to look at camera 3. Well, my problem was,
talk to Ernie for the first 4 words,
right,
and then address camera 3.
Correct. And my biggest problem was, again, that was another TV sort of anachronism where let's make people as uncomfortable as possible. So if any of you guys in this room have ever been interviewed, legitimately with a camera, you stiffen up immediately, right? Everybody feels like, oh shit, I'm on TV. And then we put makeup on you and we put an earpiece in and we tell you to look at certain places when you're talking, and all of a sudden it becomes, I'm thinking about, where am I turning? And so what are you not thinking about? The last thing you're thinking about is saying something intelligent or meaningful. So we just threw all that out and just said, forget about it. And then the honest to God truth, if I recall it right, Ernie, but you can correct me, is, you know, we have meetings and, you know, I try to keep them as close to showtime as possible because I didn't want people coming in at noon for an 8 o'clock show and meet three times and whatever, because I knew the guys on the set could walk on the set with 10 minutes before the air and do it. But honestly, the famous thing, story about talent not being at the production meeting, only Ernie comes. Honestly, I think it was because Kenny just never showed up. Like, we would tell, you know, I thought he would, because I remember Michael Jackson getting mad because he liked to poke Kenny. He and Kenny were kind of rivals as players. And when he found out Kenny would be late, he'd get really pissed off. And he'd yell at Kenny, but Kenny still didn't show up. And I started to realize, and Ernie was like, we were like, I don't care. Because he ain't gonna listen, you know.
It's a lot more fun when he doesn't know what we're gonna do.
Yeah, you know? Right. You know, yeah. So we just started to go, well, I don't care. And then of course, you know, it went, you know, we started to do these kind of riffs, and Kenny would say something silly and we would rewind it. And, you know, because Kenny's one of the, he like does Don King and makes up words sometimes. And, you know, we would be like, Ernie, go, what'd you just say? And we would actually rewind the tape on the air, which was TV no-no. And then,
yeah, his first and most famous one was he described a team season as turmoilous.
Yeah.
Different. It was tumultuous and full of turmoil. And he said, because and going into the postseason, it's just, well, their season's just been so turmoilous. And I remember it was just he and I are on the set, and I'm looking at him and I'm going, the turmoilous, and it's like. And TK's like, that's what he said. Let's play it back. And so here we are, you know, again, breaking all these long-held rules that, no, you don't point out mistakes. You know, you don't do that, and you certainly don't replay it. And it was like, no, Kenny, you got to hear this. It was turmoilous. He and I still laugh about it.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been 20 years, and he'll say, yeah, that's, you know, Cleveland's having kind of a turmoilous year. And so, yeah, that was – and that's all from TK just saying, let's look at this show and how it's best going to be, and let's not get bogged down by reading this or reading that. Let's just, you guys, get out there and talk hoop. I'll tell you when you're done, and then we'll have a game, and then we'll do halftime, and I'll tell you when that's over. Don't worry about the clock. And that's where he's been so good, and TK's passed it on to Jeremy Levin, who does a lot of the shows. Now, with just, don't be married to the stopwatch, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't say, wow, what a great conversation, wrap it up. It's like, keep it going. I'll make the time up somewhere else. And I'd always much rather be in my chair than his, because what goes on in that control room, there are some serious injuries that that are absorbed by various members of that crew up there who are getting screamed at because a graphic's wrong or the tape rolled the wrong time. And thankfully, we're kind of oblivious to that because we don't hear that. Every now and then you hear it in the background. We say, if you don't shut up, I'm and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, there's somebody's getting chewed in there. How about that? It's nice and calm out here. But really, that's the way it would play out, is that you got a guy like Kenny, because back to when he did his little stints with us, TK and I had the conversation after. And I said, boy, when his playing days are over,
it'd be great.
He's got to be on here. I mean, the guy is tremendous. Some guys just have it. Kenny had it. He had this natural ability to communicate that was, it was just like you were standing on the street corner talking to him, you know, and there was, you know, there was no effort. It was just like, this is the way he is. And so many people don't have that. So many people get, and this is, again, from years of doing that show where we just bring people in for the playoffs. And there were people you thought, oh, this guy is so engaging as a player, mm-hmm. and his interviews are so good. When he comes in, it's going to be tremendous. And you would think that, you know, the red light would go on, and some of these guys, you would think they were standing at the free throw line in game seven mm-hmm. with 0.7 to go, needing to make two free throws. And it was like, where's the guy that we all know and love and who's so fun and engaging? And he's deer in the headlights. and so when a guy like Kenny comes along, it's like, oh, now he gets it. He gets it. We got to have him. And
yeah, and he was on a team. That was, and then, you know, that like, again, we were able to do things. We would rewind stuff on the air. Kenny would notice stuff. Like, I forget, this isn't a good example because it's juxtaposing a new one with an old one. But what's the guy's name in Portland? Or Really Tan Ken? Or
Really Tan Portland Ken.
Yeah, the Really Tan Portland Ken, this goofy-looking fan. Well, Kenny would notice stuff like that on tape in a highlight. It would just be a cutaway of a fan. Ernie would be saying, here comes, you know, so-and-so. And Kenny would go, look at that dude over there. And we would stop the tape and let him talk about mm-hmm. the weird-looking dude or whatever. And, of course, that was unheard of. You know, you don't do that on the air. And the first time I did it, my AD was screaming at me because the time was now all screwed up because it was a minute and a half, and we stopped it a minute in, and now they had no count. I'm like, look, when the dude puts his hands up at the end, go
in
to the
slow motion.
We'll be fine. Yeah, you know, exactly. So, you know, it'll be all right. And so there were some things in the control room I had to get people to kind of buy into. But a lot of it was accident. Lenny, to his credit, I think this was after we hired Charles, because that kind of went, everything went obviously batshit crazy with Charles. But Lenny brilliantly just thought we needed a graphics artist, which I never would have thought of. And I'm like, what do we need him for? Well, maybe he'll have, I don't know if he listens to the show. And so, you know, there's a new monitor up on the wall, and I barely notice it because I'm as technical as nobody. And I look up and Charles is saying some weird, funny shit. And this guy's drawn this funny picture that's imitating it. I'm going, Lenny, what's that? And he goes, oh, that's the artist I hired. And I said, can I put that on TV? And he goes, yeah, look, go to Paintbox, you know. And then up came the very first Alex Paintbox, which, you know, went on to Be Gone Fishings and everything else. But we were just sitting there. I had no idea. And, you know, he's one of the great geniuses of the show, Alex.
And it was Alex from the start?
Yes, from the start. And I met Alex, who is as critical as anybody. You should definitely talk to him about his stories. But, you know, once Charles came, it was all bets are off. because here's a dude who contradicts himself in the same sentence, makes up words like Kenny. But Kenny is... where the sort of symphony and the dance created was EJ led the band. And when Charles would just screw up a note, Kenny would counterpunch, boom, just a quick, what did you just say? And that gave Ernie just a second to go, he really did say that, and then have his line. And so there was this dance that was created where Chuck would be this outrageous person and Kenny would give you that little jab, and then Ernie would have that zing coming around the end because he had an extra second to hear what just happened. Again, we go back to the old days. I don't, you know, when EJ did a million two-anchor shows, local TV, you know, you see the anchor one does this story, anchor two does that story, bing, boom, bing. They don't hear a friggin' thing the other one's saying. Ernie could actually finish the sentence by saying, going over to Tim Kiley with the other story, and you know, we'll have more at 11 o'clock. And Tim, you're an asshole. And I would go, well, that's right, Ernie, and then over and over, because they weren't listening, right? Because they weren't looking at each other, because they weren't at ease. So all these things, like the greatest part about Charles was Kenny already established it, but Charles wouldn't look at a camera if you put a gun. If you said look at camera three, Charles will look at camera four just to do it on purpose. Mm-hmm. We would sit in a room and Ernie would go, I really want to hear what Charles has to say. This was our brilliant planning. We would say, I really want to hear what Charles has to say about Shaquille O'Neal tonight when he was playing. Okay, we'll cut some Shaquille B-roll, right? And Ernie would start the show and say, Chuck, what about Shaquille? And Chuck would go, well, you know, Shaquille, oh, you know, we have no idea what he's going to say. You know, Shaquille, and I'd roll a tape, and he'd see the tape, and he'd see it with Shaquille, and he'd actually go, but I really want to talk about Luke Walton. You know, like he changed, yeah. Like it was literally to tell us to go, for, you know, like yeah. knowing he was torturing us, which we just went right back at him with it, you know, which was great.
When we first started out, the three of us, and we were thrilled too when we won the duel for Charles, because it looked like he was going to go to NBC and everybody assumed that. And then he changed his mind and he came to work for us. And it was like, well, you know, is the novelty going to wear off at some point? And he's going to be like, oh, here we are in here again. And that's never happened. He's always, you know, come in with the same, hey, let's have a good time tonight. Let's have fun. But when we first started out, we didn't know exactly how the dynamic was going to work, but Kenny and Charles came out for a halftime. And I remember Charles asking Kenny, what are you going to say about that? Mm-hmm. Whatever we're going to do, whatever we're going to discuss at that halftime. Kenny said, you'll find out.
Yep.
And that just set the tone for the next Kenny. 20 years that I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to say so that you can prepare something. We're all just going to kind of let her rip. And that's what's worked so well. And sometimes it's, I mean, you remember the night he went off on PETA?
Charles went off on PETA.
Here's, you know, it's like, again, this was nothing that we discussed in our production mm-hmm. meeting. This was something that I looked on, I think I got it off wherever we were getting our news from. Here comes a story about how the NBA is considering a synthetic basketball. Get away from leather because PETA doesn't think it's appropriate to use leather basketballs. And I just handed that to Chuck while we were watching the first half of a game in the green room. And he just kind of looked at it and then just put it away. And I was, okay. And we go out there for halftime, live. And Charles is, you know, gets out there about 20 seconds before we start. And hey, welcome to the, back then, whatever, Prudential Halftime Report. Ernie Johnson, Kenny Smith, Charles Barkley, and Chuck reaches into his coat pocket and takes out a hamburger.
Yep.
It's like a McDonald's burger still wrapped up. And okay, Chuck, you've piqued my interest. What do you got? Well, I see that PETA is interested in having the NBA get away from a leather basketball. I just want the folks at PETA to know that animals are good for two things, eating and testing.
Just made the hamburger.
We're live. Yeah. We're live on the air. And he's just trying to eviscerate PETA. And so like any good host, I was like, Kenny?
Yeah, exactly.
So I did say to Charles on the air that night, I said, Chuck, you know that saying something like that, we could have protesters outside the studio doors
right.
by the end of the night. He said, we'll run them down like the dogs they are. I said, and we'll be back with more after this.
And I think we had an Alex Paint box right away with these PETA people screaming and all this other stuff.
But it was just, that was one of those things where it's like, wow, this totally is unlike anything I've ever done in my career to be working with this guy. And then, and to his credit and to Kenny's too, they have brought that every night. That's, you know, it's a lot of seasons. That's a lot of Thursday nights and sometimes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, and a lot of playoff nights where it's never like, well, I need a night off. I don't want to be there. It's like, hey, this is what we do. And that just, you know, once stuff like that happened, TK, then it was like the floodgates were open. And we just said, well, if we can do that and still be on the air, then we can do this.
He would call on occasion and say, boy, I need me a hamburger. Or he said to me one night, boy, I need me the biggest fish tank y'all can get. And I'm like, what? And he's going, you see David Blaine? And I'm like, what are you talking? And like, I had to look it up. Because David Blaine, the magician, had set the world record for
holding his breath
for 8 minutes. Yeah. So I get a fish tank, and we have a big fish tank. And we said, what do you want to do, Chuck? He goes, I'm going to break David Blaine's record. And he put on these stupid goggles, and dunked his head. It's, you know, a famous clip. He dunked his head in the water, and Kenny made him laugh. You guys made him laugh.
Well, we were just like looking at him, just looking at that shot through the bottom of the fish thing with his big old face in here. And then you could see him start to laugh, and we knew it was over.
So how long do you think you can hold your breath underwater, Chuck?
I'm thinking a minute. I go 45 seconds is the most.
Put the goggles on.
Oh, yes.
Charles, you may begin.
Hey, how much is that? I saw these 7 seconds.
You're almost.
He's not making it.
Charles, you're almost there. That's
it's only 11 seconds.
12.
Wow. He's not making it. He's coming up. It's only 20. I know. 20 seconds.
Quick, help. Quick, help. Quick, towels, quick. Oh, very nice.
You can't be making me laugh, man.
We're the ones doing the show. We're the ones that people see. But the crew behind the scenes, Alex with the paint box, everybody on that crew, they're able to take an idea. You know, Steve Fiorello would say, how can we best do this? And all of a sudden, well, here's the fish tank, and here's a, and here we'll put it on this table, and we'll put this camera underneath shooting up.
Yep.
And so it's, so it's not like, okay, here's a studio camera looking at a guy with his head in a thing. You had that look, so you, which sold the whole bit of Charles' big face trying to hold his breath and then trying not to smile. And it was just, it was tremendous. And that happens all the time. There's always somebody on that studio crew who's got an idea of how something can best be carried out.
Yeah, and the most famous, Dave Hansen, who's still here. Dave is a stagehand or, you know, one of the lighting guys. And, you know, just these guys are great. And again, the best ideas are stolen. And my thing with bringing those guys on was, I used to watch Letterman, and Letterman would bring his mom on, or the dude who was the stagehand, and he'd be part of the show.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, so we have Joe Underhill, who, or before him, John O'Connor, who we used to torture, and we would bring them on for gags, and Chuck would yell at them and throw stuff at them, or, you know, Ralph Prado, the crazy stagehand. But Dave Hansen, we were shooting this thing called Sir Charles Theater, which TNT asked us. This was after Charles got popular, and suddenly everybody wanted a piece of this. So we would shoot movie reviews. And this was, you know, like, what, it was a dinner and a movie. So Ernie and Kenny and Chuck would pop up in the beginning and then in the middle and in the end. And they would give us a clip or something and to have Charles react to. But we put Chuck in a throne. Kenny and Ernie sat there, and there was a knight, you know, an armor knight standing there. So we had these funny moments with these bad movies and all this stuff, and we'd make fun of it. TNT loved it, and what can we do with Charles for this last one to, you know, bust his chops? And Ernie said, is that somebody's suit? And I went, yeah, it's Dave's. So I went up. He said, okay, and maybe can he stand in it? Like,
can you put that suit of armor on?
So I went up to him. Do I go, Dave, do you ever put it on? And he goes, oh, I do it all the time at parties and scare kids. And I'm like, are you shitting me? And he goes, yeah. He goes, but you got to do it for like 30 minutes because we had to have the set out there and we were doing the show and, you know, the pregame show. And then we had to go sit on the set. And Hansen goes, I can make it. And it was holding like a pillow or something. And you could take it from there.
Yeah, we do our thing. We react to a clip. We talk about that's a terrible scene and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and we're going to miss this. This has been a great little thing that we've been doing. And, you know, with your big chair and with the suit of iron over here. Charles looks at the suit of iron and Dave just lunges at him.
Charles shit himself.
Charles was stunned.
I'm not on the suit of armor, don't you?
And for me and Kenny, it was just like, it worked. Oh, that's tremendous. Yeah. But it was, one of those moments too, where you could see it. Charles just glancing over his shoulder and bang, here comes the move. It was tremendous. But there was lots, you know, it was the Champions Club when we had Magic, you know, when we didn't let Charles in and how the guys in there get a smoke machine going. They have this thumping techno music and we're coming in and out, yelling at names of guys who have championship rings who are in there presumably in there.
I'm going to get the manager. Hold on, hold on. The manager.
Give me just a second. Jean Tobac is going nuts in here.
Jack Haney said, don't let you in.
Charles. Oh, so y'all are making fun of the Chuckster.
He's a classic pie in the face, and he loves it. And my favorite of all time, and again, this involved some elaborate stuff with the crew, was the diaper change. And, you know, Kenny had been off. He had been newly married. And, Gwen, his wife, had given birth. And, of course, Kenny milked, I don't know what you're supposed to get, a month of paternity leave for the dad.
Yeah.
Kenny turned it into like 3 years or something because Kenny's a con man.
Until the kid was out of diapers.
Yeah, exactly. So he comes back, but every night Charles would bitch, why ain't Kenny here? Kenny's milking it, whatever, which he was, but it was funny. And, you know, we found out early on in Charles' stint with us that he's a clean freak because his mother, who worked her butt off to raise three of the boys, and he had to clean the house. He was the oldest, so he was in charge, so he cleans everything. And I knew just from being the way he is, he's squeamish, he jumps at everything, he's easily scared, he crumbles under pressure, which is why he screws up who he plays for and all that. He can't, you know, doesn't know who plays for who under pressure. So I knew all these things, and I bet that son of a gun has never changed a diaper in his life because he has a daughter, grown, but I know he never got near one, right? And Kenny comes back. So we said, we're going to have a diaper change.
Because Charles is like, Kenny said, hey, come on, man. I've been taking care of Gwen. I've been taking care of the baby. I've been changing diapers. Oh, you can't change a diaper. So, so suddenly here comes the diaper changing contest with Kenny and Chuck with these babies. And the crew is like, well, we'll make...
They were baby dolls.
Baby dolls, yes, yeah. Baby dolls.
No one was harmed in this.
And we'll make Charles a little more realistic. And so they melted a Butterfinger in the diaper. So that was the diaper that he was going to have to change. And so we say, ready, go. And Kenny, takes the diaper off of his little baby. And here Charles... figures out the tabs on the diaper, takes it off, opens it up, and here is this melted Butterfinger, which was remarkably lifelike to the point that Charles stumbled backwards about six steps and later admitted, he said, I thought I was going to pass out.
He said,
I had blacked out momentarily.
He wobbles
It was like he got hit with a right cross and he's trying to stay up. And he recovered and they went back and they started, there's talcum powder flying and they finished.
Were laughing so hard. Like you couldn't even.
I couldn't. It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And then
I kept trying to say, EJ, please tell the audience it's not real shit. He's just laughing his ass off.
And then so they finish and Kenny has his baby and he's got him in his arms and he's rocking this baby. Charles has this cockeyed diaper on his.
See, mine moves.
Your baby is very happy, Kenny.
Mine happy too.
Oh, it is. You're happy and nasty.
We shouldn't be allowed to have that much fun. That's been the greatest thing through the years is when you come to work, you're going to laugh. There are not a lot of guys who... Yeah. And men and women who can go to their jobs and know they're going to laugh. I don't know a lot of accountants who say, today at work's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, right,
We know that when we go in there, and sometimes after the production meeting, we say, I cannot wait until we do that
drop
segment.
This bomb.
Yeah, and so that was one of the classics of all time, that. And Kenny trying to recreate the Kobe jump over the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Which was tremendous.
That was all Alex.
Yeah, well... But that again, there were so many hands in that pie.
Kobe had jumped over a car, obviously. It was dolled up in special effects.
Yeah. All right, do not try what I'm about to attempt right now.
And that was the big viral video. And, of course, this was the beginning of the days of viral videos, which you now live by.
That is how you jump over an Aston Martin, boy.
So that was the whole thing. We were going to do it. And We told Kenny that we were going to have him jump over the car, and he thought he was jumping over the car.
Just like Kobe.
Just like
did.
Kobe. He was just going to like recreate Kobe, it. You know, he, you know, of course, Kenny ate that up with a spoon. But the real plan was he was going to be run over, right? So, because it was all going to be done in special effects, so we didn't care. We Michael Doyle, who's the sweetest guy in the world, told Kenny the biggest line of bullshit I've ever heard. Like, this is going to be better than the Nike thing. You know, and Kenny, being the con man that he is, just gobbled it up, right? So he couldn't wait to get out there and stand there and do the bit. So we did the bit.
And all Kenny had to do was basically put on shoes, walk in the middle of the parking lot, pretend there was a car coming at him, and jump as high as he could. And they would make the car go under him, and then he would, you know, it'd be fine.
When we knew we were going to run Kenny over, we said Ernie has to be driving. So, you know, we brought Ernie out later and took all the shots of Ernie, like, psycho look on his face, like he's running down this. And if I can do this, we had an intern who was fairly new, Steve Fiorella, said, well, we need a shot of something flying through the air, right?
Yeah, something's got to get hit by the car.
Something's got to look like it got hit and it's flying through the air. So we have an intern who's just some kid that goes to Georgia and probably walks in thinking, I don't know, this will be the greatest job of my life. And I said to him, I need a 6-foot black inflatable doll. There's a porn store up the street. So we sent this kid, and I think he was on the phone that night saying, Ma, they just sent me to him.
Yeah.
So we just needed this rubber doll that we could throw up in the air. That's where you got it, an insurrection up the street. So that was that part of the bit. And then we did the bit, and I showed it to Ernie.
No, and I never saw it before.
Oh, that's
it went on
right.
The air.
No, but I remember coming to you because I came to you. Remember, it was a Laker night.
Yeah.
And Lakers were notorious.
The playoff night.
Yeah. And it was all, we always did Nito at the end of the show when this was going to be the big ba-boom ending, obviously. But Kobe had an incredible night, and they sat him down with like 5 minutes to go. So we're like, if we got a chance to put, if there's a chance to get him on two-way tonight, this would be the night because they had a blowout win, he had a good game, and he's already resting. So we can ask. And I said to EJ, if we get them, we'll just run this thing right away. Like, we're not going to wait, and all that. We'll have Kobe sitting there watching it. And if you see the clip, now Ernie sets it up beautifully, but Kobe's got a headset on and he's watching it as it happens.
Yeah. We talked about the game. Hey, you scored 47 tonight, huge win. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then we get to the point and said, look, normally we would end the night this way, Kobe, with this clip. But since you're here, we're going to do it now.
What we want to do first is talk to you about this thing that hit the internet with you jumping over the Aston Martin, okay? Well, there was some reaction right here in the studio from a guy named Kenny Smith.
I had a little reaction to that.
Uh-huh. You're thinking you can do that, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, I got my own shoe coming out, too. It's a Hyper Dunk Smith from Nike as well. You know, it's a little bit different. Yeah. You know, but, you know, you can.
Let's see what we're going to do. Kobe, listen to this. He went out there in the parking lot tonight, and none of us have seen this piece of tape yet. So, and so we're just like you. So we're watching it for the first time. Uh-oh. Go ahead.
And this thing plays out, and here goes this body flying through the air, and all that's left are the shoes in the middle of the parking lot.
Took him out his shoes.
And then here's a shot of, oh, hold it, we need to check the tape. And then here's the shot of me driving the car.
It was Ernie. Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry.
Kobe's reaction was so genuine and so gut-busting funny. He couldn't even stay in the frame. He was dipping out of the frame laughing about, let me say it again. It was tremendous. And that was one of those nights where that entire crew, everybody had a hand in it. And that's why ultimately down the line when we have these nights when we are fortunate enough to have Inside the NBA called at the Emmys, you know, as the best studio show or whatever. That's why everybody on that crew walks around and says, that was for me. That was all of us. That was 70 people who made that happen, you know? And so, no, those are the cool moments where everybody says, you know, I really contributed to that night because, again, to TK's credit, he takes input from everybody. He's never been one of these guys who said, I'm the producer. This is the way we'll do it. It's always been, what do you think about this? And we're like, yeah, it might be easier to do it this way. Okay, do it.
Twitter and social media and Instagram, you know, they're all just delivery systems to me. There's very little new under the sun. So if the cleaning lady has a good idea, I'm going to steal it.
Yeah.
I'll give him credit, but, you know, I'll take anything.
Did you go after Shaq because of the time that the show was set and he was known as a goofy guy, or how did Shaq kind of join the...
I just thought, you know, in the meetings I was in, it was like, you know, there was a debate. Like, people were like, you know, you might ruin the chemistry or all this other stuff. And I'm like, it's Shaq. He's just like Charles, except just bigger. He's this super cartoon character. And, you know, as long as he's willing to go along, I think we'll have fun, right? And so what we did was, the biggest critique that we got, other than people saying, you're going to ruin the show, and, you know, because people just hate Shaq and nobody roots for Goliath, which was fine. We, you know, we're used to that. But the biggest critique was his mumbling, because he mumbled all his career. Well, he did it on purpose, because his father was very strict with him about, let your game do the talking, right? So that's why Shaq would do an interview like that. So we get him. And I said to him, this is the biggest thing you're going to have to overcome. You're going to have to be loud. And when there's music and there's other people talking and there's that sound over highlights, you've got to almost feel like you're shouting. But I said, we're not doing that night one. And he went, what do you mean? And I told Arian, I said, when we come out, we open the show with Shaq, after we introed him with this silly taped intro, we all mumbled. I wanted all everybody to mumble, you know, so that we could just go, like, and address it. Like, really? This is what you think? Well, this is what we'll do, yeah. You know. He's very strident about getting better all the time. He calls himself the Black Ernie Johnson. He had to read a speech the other night. He go crack up. I had him read a speech, a Winston Churchill speech, which he did very well, because he wants to be the Black Ernie Johnson. He was great for about a month. He was, and I would get in his ear. You know, I had never gotten Chuck's ear. He doesn't listen. And, you know, Ernie's ear is just to say, wrap it up or go. But Shaq, I'd be like, Shaq, louder, louder. So then all of a sudden, about a month goes by, and he has a terrible halftime, just mumbles. And I marched down the steps. And, you know, my whole feeling with these guys is I didn't play it very well, but I played football long enough to know that they respond to being talked to as a coach talks to you. So you don't hold back. So I go up, and when you're yelling at Shaq, you're pointing straight up about 8 feet. But I called him MF and this and that, and you, and he kind of hung his head. Like, I said, where did that voice go? What are you doing? And I went, are we good? And he kind of went, yeah, okay, we're good. I turned around. I'm not lying to you. He picked me up, grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and my belt, and held me over his head, right? And that was his message. And I looked down, and I went, good, we're good, Shaq. Mm-hmm. And I went, okay, you showed me what you could do, and I showed you what I can do, and that was it.
I think the thing that attracted him to our show to begin with was the fun we had. And you talk to players around the league, when they go to shoot around the day after we were on the air, it was always, hey, did you see what the guys on Inside the NBA did? You know, and so Shaq is the world's biggest kid. And so, he wanted to be part of all that fun. And at first, he wanted that to happen every night, where I don't think he understood that a lot of what happened on our show just happened organically. It was just like, we didn't really plan to do this, and it just happened. And so he wanted to have a Christmas tree pushed over on him, and he wanted, you know, he offered to have himself set on fire and to be tased. And I mean, for real. He says, you can tase me next week. Yeah, I've been to stunt school. I don't know how to get to. And it's like, you know, and Kenny and Charles were like, you're going to want to set yourself on fire before this thing is over. You don't have to do something every week, Shaq. Oh, yeah, but it's going to be funny, and we'll get two billion hits. Anyway, I had a conversation with him, just like, you know, TK had one. And I said, look, I'm all for having fun. And I said, and you're a great addition to the show. I said, but learn this. There's something about Charles, even though he gets, you know, there's all the talk about what did Charles say. He always comes in here with three or four things he wants to get off his chest, three or four things he wants to talk about before the night's over. And I said, so do that. Come in saying, yeah, I really want to talk about how well this guy's playing, or I want to talk about a team that's disappointing, or I want to have something that you want to get off your chest or out there. And I said, because the fun will take care of itself. I said, but you need some of that NBA stuff too. And he's gotten so much better about breaking down tapes and wanting to give me some of this guy not playing well, because I think I can help him. I want to see him do this with his game. So, yeah, once you get over that initial thing of, hey, this is a really fun show to watch, now let's just be crazy and have fun, he's adapted great to having the proper mix of hijinks and craziness and NBA debate. So,
and his funniest moment was, I think, the fall.
That was not planned. As you know, that was, he blamed it on Ernie for rigging it so that cable was around his.
Yeah,
which I probably would have endorsed that.
Get him, Ken.
Set me up, Ernie.
Hey. What do you mean? Yes.
Because of the improvements to the studio, here was this huge board for Kenny to diagram plays at halftime. That was just one of those things that Shaq said, okay, well, he's got this. Well, I'm going to just add to that by racing him to the board and then gloating whenever he beats him. And so Kenny never really knows when Shaq is going to race him to the board. Mm-hmm. But Kenny turns in his chair to go back to the board. And then however that happened that night where he got all tangled up, but he went down.
No, that
and,
was
and yanked that, the, you know, and the
monitor
the
out.
Monitor comes flying out. Like I'm thinking, you know what would really be funny is if I wrapped this around his leg and then he did like thousands of dollars of damage to our equipment. That would really be funny. No.
Okay, Ernie.
Don't blame me.
Yes, you did. You tied around my leg.
No, I did.
Yes,
no,
you did.
How am I going to tie
something around you, Ernie.
Down goes Shaq.
But then for months, all I get asked is, hey, that night that, you know, why'd you do Shaq like that? And please, I didn't do Shaq like that. The big guy does it all himself. But again, those are the things, those spontaneous and unscripted things that happen, that's why people continue to, you know, they watch the show. They don't know what's going to happen. Neither do we. So we're all in the same boat as far as that goes.
And along with like the laughter, what's so cool about Inside is addressing social issues. And could y'all expand on that? How did Inside become the show where you weren't afraid to talk about, you didn't just stick to sports?
I think Chuck had a lot to do with that.
I think
Chuck.
Although Kenny was never afraid of it, but obviously when Charles came on, I mean, he made it clear.
That was his reputation already. I mean,
right.
As and a player, he would weigh in on whatever's going on in the world. And so to his credit, he never change that side of himself. He still wanted to talk about everything. And so, yeah, and again, it's just the willingness of TK and everybody else to say, yeah, let's go there. Let's go ahead and make this about something that's not just.
I remember, like, we were having a big debate about, I think it was when Trump was elected. And obviously, he was not a friend of a lot of he's not a friend of Chuck's, and you know, but the election was Tuesday, so we were on a Thursday after that. And I went to sales because, you know, we don't have a lot of time in pregame, and you don't talk about a subject like that in 6 minutes. So I went to sales and I said, I want you to blow out the two commercials. And I don't care where you put them, we'll put them in the end of the game, whatever, or make them up some other time, but give me that extra 6 or 7 minutes of commercials. We're going to talk about a serious subject. And they all weighed in, you know, what's happened to our country, where are we going and all this. And Ernie gave a tremendously heartfelt speech about his hope for the country. That was, I knew the only part of Mike can take credit for was once I heard we were going to do it, I knew we'd had to get rid of it and get rid of the commercial shit and give them all the time they needed, or as much as we could give them. But that's the way we feel about it. Killing a commercial, that's another, you know, no from the old days, you know. But that was done for a totally different reason. It wasn't done for a yuck. It was done for the ability to give them a chance to be intelligent and not say everything in 30-second sound bites, because that's not the way we all talk to each other. I mean, is anybody here timing the podcast, right? That's why we have to do the same thing on TV. You know, that stuff, we embrace it. Honestly, you know, I would never feel as comfortable without Ernie doing that, because he balances things. When you have to do a thoughtful subject and to make sure that somebody's not going down a road that's I don't care if they go down a road that's crazy, but you at least have someone there who's willing and has the balls to stop them and say, "You sure about that?" And that's all credit to Ernie for having the guts to do that, because I can't do that in my position. I can't do it. I can do it before the show, but that doesn't mean that they won't. And again, another funny thing about Charles is, like I told you, I'll roll a tape and he knows, he'll see the tape, he'll change the subject, like, just because he wants to. So I know I can't say to him, "You got to go this and you need to say this and this." And I don't think that's my role anyways. But when it comes out live, I always thank the good Lord that I got Ernie there to be a backstop.
No, we've had more than our share of conversations, TK and I. I mean, obviously the most contentious of those was the postal worker thing. But I can't tell you how many times we finished a show and he's fired off something to me, or I've fired off something to him, like, "Glad you're in that chair. You know, we've been in this thing together for a long time, and we've maybe it's because we had to do something on the show that was a directive from powers higher than us that we have to do this." And it's like, neither of us wanted to do it, but we are obligated to do it. And it's like, glad you're there. Glad that I could come in and scream to you about what it felt like to do it. And, you know, it's the same. It's those things yep. just happen. But he's also, you know, there are times where it's been frustrating when you feel like, "I am not able to get out what I want to do because this guy's yelling and this guy's yelling." And TK was like, "It's okay. You know, you're too close to the thing. Look at the tape back and you'll see that people were loving it," yeah. even though it may have been frustrating. I think, because there have only been like three times in the last, since we've all been together, three times in the last 18 years that I've actually considered dropping off a resume at that Chevron station up the street on the way home. Well, just saying, there's got to be an easier way.
The maddest Ernie ever was, madder than the cop, which was really mad, was I discovered very early that while Chuck's cleaning freak, Ernie is very, very specific about how he wants his notes, his pens. So he had his pens in his room, and they were color coordinated. And I went in and I screwed him up on purpose. And we laughed about it, but he got it.
It's a little OCD.
Yeah. But that's why can organize, you can compartmentalize anything. That's amazing. I realized that this was not a soft moment or soft place for him. And that's the way we operate. As soon as we figure out your soft spot, that's the neighborhood I grew up in. Everybody in my neighborhood had a nickname, and it was never complimentary. You know, if you had I was fat as a kid, so they called me Jelly Bean. Like, that was the way we grew up. So you had to learn how to bust balls and take it back. So, of course, I immediately tell Chuck, "If you ever want to make Ernie mad, mess with his notes on the air." And one night they're sitting there and Chuck
starts on the road.
Yes, yes. And Chuck starts reaching and Ernie's going, "Chuck," and we're alive. "Don't do that." Right. And then finally Chuck grabs it. What did he crumble it up?
Because Kenny said, Kenny's.
This
was basically what I do, like, for the post game show. Every segment of the show, I've got a couple of notes because I've got the roadmap. We got to get from this highlight to this highlight. We know we have a sponsored graphic we have to get to here, and then I might jot down a couple of notes like, "Okay, I want to talk about this here or this here." Anyways, just kind of like, here's the next segment, and he took that and he ripped it up, and we went to break. I was like, "Chuck, you'd probably kill me if I came after you, but if you ever do that again, I will. I don't care." I said, that's such disrespect for the job I do. And I was going to, I said, "I'll get a new cup of coffee and it'll go right in your face."
I'll leave something that soap and water won't wash off, Chuck.
Yeah. And And it, I mean, like I didn't talk to him. I asked Shaq about something. I asked Kenny about something. Charles started to answer something. I was like, oh, Shaq. I mean, I wasn't gonna listen to him or let him say anything. And he knew. But then again, that's one of those things. That's what I do. That's my preparation for me has always been the most important thing about whatever job I'm doing. And if I'm not prepared, then these guys won't be at their best. And that's why I'm there. I mean, I'm there because these are the guys who played. I'm trying to get them to shine wherever I can. You can mess with just about anything, but you mess with my stuff. Man, I still think about it now. And I was when he ripped that thing up, I was like, okay, I could walk off and let them do the rest of the show.
Boiling.
Or I could just throw a cup of water on him, or I could do whatever. It was Kenny. Kenny was the one who was the last one. You may have said it too, but it was like, Kenny's like, oh man, you don't have the guts to rip that up. Bang, here he does it.
I
was mad at both of them.
Then the other two for me were the two nights I remember driving home at whatever gone ungodly hour it was and saying, I've lost my job. Chuck was suspended for a month for a DUI. And, you know, we treated it very seriously. But we did show him he had to go to jail. So for the first offense, 2 days in jail. And we actually, during the month, at one point got footage of Chuck walking into jail in a jumpsuit. We showed it. We didn't make fun of it. We just said, there he is. You know, of course, Chuck being Chuck, he never parsed words. He immediately said, I'm an idiot. A person of my stature should never get in a car after drinking. I have enough money for any kind of transportation. Straightforward. Had about 3 or 4 quotes. We come back. It's the first show that he's actually going to be on our air in the middle of the season. It was one of the few times me and Ernie and Chuck sat down. Because we said, look, Chuck, we know you've addressed it. And, you know, your honesty has been great. But we got to address it. I know, boys. I know how this works. I got it. We go, what are you going to say? He goes, I know what I'm going to say. I'm going to apologize. Because me and Ernie were like, okay, we got to do this. And because it was like company mandated. But you couldn't ignore it. You know, it was obviously a story. And so we start the show. Welcome to the pregame show. And Ernie says, Chuck, you've been away for a while. What do you have to say for yourself? I remember that clearly. And Chuck goes, Ernie, I did this and I did that and I'm a screw up and but. And when he said but, we all looked up and he goes, I know what I'm going to do if I get in trouble again, Ernie. And Ernie goes, what? And he goes, I'm going to do like they do in Hollywood and say I'm gay and I'm going into rehab.
Yeah.
And we just fell out.
Only on our show.
Only he could say that, wink at the camera, and get away with it.
He's got diplomatic immunity. He really does. And I liken it to Ted Turner. And I've never been around anybody who's had that like Ted had it.
Yeah.
Where Ted could say something and they may have been stunned, but then it's always, well, it's Ted being Ted. Chuck has the same thing. That's Charles being Charles.
Yeah.
And so he has some ways of saying things that a lot of other folks on TV would never
get away with.
But here it is. He's been doing that all of his life. Mm-hmm. You know, ever since he's been in the public eye and been a guy who's been quotable, he's been that way. And so it's, you know, that's Charles being Charles. If I had a mind to say some of the stuff that Chuck said, then I would be at the Chevron station up the road. But it's been a marvel to behold, that's for sure.
No, it's amazing.
Just how everything has played out and how that the longevity to me is the thing.
He's fresh.
People are always in this business trying to find the right combination of people who will work together. Well, let's try this person with this person. Let's change this after 2 years. And here we are, and it's like, you guys just keep on doing your thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to take somebody off. We're not going to, you know, it's just for somehow it's worked somehow.
The last one I'll tell you is I thought I lost my job for good. The worst was it was Martin Luther King Day and we had done, you know, serious stuff and da 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 da. But, you know, there are a lot of highlights on Martin Luther King Day because everybody plays, which is not usual for us because we're usually only doing 3 or 4 highlights. So Memphis is playing in Memphis, and we show, there's a guy that speed paints. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he's, you know, in the course of 30 seconds.
Garibaldi or somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he paints somebody's portrait. So he's painting in Memphis. And we're showing it, and we're saying, you know, that's pretty cool. He was painting Martin Luther King. So I had showed it live to let the guys react because it was Martin Luther King Day. And Chuck says, Ernie, who that he painting? That looked like Oliver Miller, right? And yeah. Who's this fat center he used to play with? It was, you know, half. And like, Ernie's like, Chuck, it's MLK. What are you out of your mind? Yeah, so we go to
Charles, it's MLK Day. Do you think possibly that's Martin Luther King?
That looked like Oliver Miller. So
it looks like Oliver Miller to me.
So Alex puts up a split screen of Oliver Miller and Martin Luther King, and they look amazingly alike. And I'm sitting there, and I hear the AD going, 30 seconds. And they're still kind of laughing at Chuck's idiocy that he didn't recognize Martin Luther King. And I'm going, should I do this or shouldn't I? Greatest person on the face of the earth. No name backup center in the NBA. They just happen to look like each other. And I did it. I put it up. And A busted out laughing because the resemblance was great. But I went, that one might have been too much. I was waiting the next day for the phone call about you're out. Right. You know, I don't know how I got away with it.
Similar to the Ernie and Pitbull split screen.
Yeah, I don't think it was exactly along those lines. But you got to admit, Jason Kidd looks like Pitbull.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on,
I
Jason Kidd
you.
Looks like Pitbull. I come I out with something with like that, and all I get from the other guys, Ernie. It's like, but you look at him. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
And so the laughs, the social issues, and then also just the personal turn that all the inside guys are willing to take, like you said, with Chuck addressing the DUI, and Ernie, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you about your fight against cancer, like when mm-hmm. you were the host of Inside during all of that.
Yeah.
How was the show there for you? Is that something that's unique about Inside that you're willing to kind of share that personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was that was a very strange window of time back there in 2003, 3 through 6, really, because after a doctor told me that I had non-Hodgkin's, I told some of the folks at work, maybe a handful of people at work, because I didn't know at that point if they're going to say, hey, you need to undergo treatment immediately, you need to do this or that. So I had to tell some folks at work, say, look, here's the deal. So you got to be ready just in case they say, you know, you've got to have chemo, you got to do whatever. And so back then, we were doing college football at one point with Brian Bosworth.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got diagnosed in August and we still had to go through tests and that kind of thing. They actually had to take a lymph node out of my neck. And so I had this scar and I had some dressing over it. And I had to do a college football show with Boz. And so I was wearing these like turtleneck kind of things to cover it up. And then, you know, it turned out that I didn't have to have treatment right away, but that was one of the things where I was trying to hide it from folks. And then it just got, you know, a couple of years later, and we knew this was going to happen. You know, my oncologist had told me, he said, you know, you're going to, at some point, your lymph nodes are going to swell to a point where we're going to have to do something. And they did. And that was like in 2006. It was the hardest time of my career because I was very self-conscious, because there were nights where I thought that it really wasn't very noticeable, and I would look at camera people who would kind of be looking around their camera at me, and I was like, I wonder if my head was not in the game, you know. I just said, I must look horrible. I must, send out this message that I've got cancer, I got a split. You know, my oncologist still had said, we don't need to do anything right now. He said, we can wait. So I, you know, if I wanted to, I could have said, hey, look, I'm going to start treatment in June and I'm just going to get off the air here in February until then. But I didn't want people to think that they had to go into hiding because they had cancer. And I stayed, you know, doing the job. And I'll tell you, there's still a twinge that goes through me. Every now and then we'll break out an old piece of video from those days. And I'll see myself in those videos, and I'm like, doggone. And so, I mean, we just, we reached that decision in February right after the All-Star game of 06 that I was just going to say on the air what was going on and tell people, because I was tired of reading little things online and other places where people were taking shots. And I said, hey, here's what's going on. And even after that, I'd have some people saying, what is he thinking, not having chemo right away? And I said, you're not sitting in there in the office with my doctor telling me how we're going to handle this. I said, I trust him. And so, you know, I stayed on the air and until we had the chemo that year, that summer. And I know I looked kind of goofy or gross. And but it's what I chose to do. And the first I remember calling Kenny and Chuck into the office separately, and I said, look, here's what I'm dealing with. And this is before I made the announcement on the air. And they were both kind of like, oh, wow. And I said, but here's what can't happen, is we can't change the show. You can't take it easy on me and say, well, I'm not going to pick on you anymore. I'm not going to, it can't change the dynamic of the show. I said, because why even do the show if we're going to play it hands off? He's the cancer guy, hands off. So we didn't. The show continued the same way. And some of our funniest clips were when I was in the middle of that stuff. But then it was very cool to come back the next basketball season after I'd had chemo. And I was there for opening night. I had no hair. I'd just been told just before that I wouldn't have to have any more chemo. Our guys had players around the league weigh in and made a tape welcoming me back and all that stuff. It was awesome. And Kobe was the last one in that rip, and he was like, hey, you're one of the brothers now. Welcome. You know, it's like, it was cool. It was cool.
Yeah, the whole crew shaved their heads.
It was a tough time, but it was.
Yeah, that's what family, you know, they'll laugh with you. They're there to see you.
Yeah, it was, because we all go through stuff. I mean, we're all, you can't spend that much time together without having some things that come up that have to be addressed, whether it's a personal thing or whether it's a family thing. And I think we all have this bond too on there, that we are all there for each other no matter what you need. And
I've been to Shaq's dad's funeral, yep. Charles's brother's and mother's funeral and grandmother's funeral, and Kenny's mom's.
Yeah.
And you know, just it's what you do. They're your brothers.
Yep.
You know. And that's what we've become.
Yeah. And so, I know we've got some years left of this golden age of Inside, but kind of how do you want Inside the NBA to be remembered as a way to kind of wrap up? Like, what do you want the legacy of the show to be?
I mean, number one, I feel uncomfortable speaking in those terms of saying, well, on the pantheon of sports programming, I think we should be.
But look, it really is.
We are lucky. We're blessed. We're fortunate beyond words to have had this much time together in an ever-changing business that always says, well, we can all make this better by changing this or getting this person out. And I just think that it's a get-to job. We get to do this, not we got to do this. Which is huge to me. Is it too many people driving to work got to because that's their work? We get to, and somehow we hit on this combination of producers and crew members and announcers who genuinely enjoy being around one another and love what we're doing. And you know, it's very flattering to hear what all the critics say for the most part. But I mean, for a lot of these people who are saying, well, it's the greatest sports studio show, or it's in the top three. That's great to hear. All I know is that it's been a heck of a way to make a living and to know you're going to go to work and laugh and hang out with people that you sincerely care about. Oh, that's a good job.
I would say, my end statement would be, for anybody who wanted to understand what it was like and what it was all about, is watch any time that we did Who He Play For. And the reason I say that is because we celebrated, we grew up, this is the expert. This is the expert analyst and the expert announcer, and they don't screw up. And we do a segment where we take our Hall of Fame star analyst and show people what he doesn't know and make fun of it. And it's funny as hell, and it's Charles looking ridiculous, and it was added one year with Shaq beating up Ernie for the answers and all this other stuff. But to me, that is the spirit of the show. Like, who would tell, if I would have told some personalities I've worked with in the past that I'm going to do a show that embarrasses them or makes them look silly if they take it the right way, they wouldn't do it. They would have walked off. Chuck wants to do it. The two times you see him mouth watering is when somebody has Krispy Kremes on and we're setting up to give him a game show. He actually starts to get excited. Like, if you could see the cutaways of him. And to me, that's the show in a nutshell. You know, we're just going to have fun.
Once again, it's time for Who He Play For? Hey! Garrett Temple, who he play for?
The Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, Memphis Grizzlies. He started every game for the Grizzlies. Yeah.
Why would I watch the Grizzlies play?
With three players on there, you're going to get a basketball breakdown. And there's not a situation in an NBA game that these guys haven't been involved in. And so who better to talk about any of that than these three? So I think we're going to entertain. And sometimes the entertainment can be their thoughts on the trade deadline. Or sometimes that entertainment can be Shaq not knowing that the Golden State Warriors played in Oakland. Or sometimes that's going to be Kenny beating Charles in a diaper-changing contest. Or sometimes that's going to be these four guys talking about the election. Or Ferguson. Or talking to Jim Brown. They will be entertained. Exactly how we go about getting there, that's the key. That's the unpredictable. That's the, I don't know what these guys are going to do next. You know, we've stayed out of that cookie cutter mentality of this show needs to be like the last show because that was a good show and now we'll do it this way. No, it's like whatever's going to work that night. And that unpredictability, I think, is what has people hooked.
Again, it as Ernie said, there's obviously luck involved. But I am a firm believer, and again, I learned this the hard way in different places, listening to people who never played, telling a player, this is what you should say. All I wanted to do was say, if I can put a guy, an intelligent person, that's got a little bit of a sense of humor, in a very comfortable situation, you may get a whole lot more out of them. And I would posit or throw out there, watch our baseball show with Pedro Martinez. It ain't bad. And you got Gary Sheffield and Jimmy Rollins. Pedro is sort of the clown prince. And the first thing I said to Pedro when he came here, I said, Pedro, I want you to speak Spanish. And he went, what? You know, Ernie was talking about being self-conscious, which is why I could never be on the air. I'm self-conscious about everything. But Pedro's life has been based on learning to speak English perfectly. I'm like, dude, speaks half the players, 75% of the players you're talking to speak Spanish. So he'd holler out to Miguel Cabrera, Burro Grande, whenever he'd do something. The next night we had Miguel Cabrera on in a post-game interview, and he starts pointing at the camera, Pedro, Burro Grande, you know. Because he had heard that Pedro had called him that. I think if you put, these guys are in outer space when it comes to comfort. But I still would say that there's a lot of dudes out there. I think you saw a lot of it with Tony Romo. Because they just said, Tony, tell us, you know what, here's the old chorus line. This is how you do a football game. Announcer says, here's the play, here's what happened. Analyst goes, here's why it happened. Every time. Boom, 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 boom. You know what Romo does? Here's what's going to happen. Blah, 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 blah. And he did a game with Ernie and Chuck years ago. I was begging people to let them do a game because I knew that's what we would get. And Ernie steered the ship, but he didn't call the game. Remember, Kenny was going, he should be over there. Yeah. This is before the play happened. Chuck's going, he's got to shoot it. Get it to him. Remember, it was like, and I remember Bill Simmons, who was sort of a flag bearer for that generation, wrote, this is before he was big, he's big shot ESPN, wrote one of the, not because it was a good comments, but an intelligent critique, because he got what we were trying to do. Just put them into comfort and have somebody else, somebody has to really do is make sure the sponsors get mentioned and let the rest of it go, you know? And I, again, the success of this show has made me try it with other shows, and it's failed with some people and it's succeeded with others, but it mostly was because some guys just never got comfortable, no matter what you did to put them in comfort. You know, I know how I am when I'm uncomfortable. And, you know, job interview, whatever you've been in. Why? Because I'm thinking about everything but what I should be doing. How do I look? What am I going to say? Just let guys go out and say, you know what the game is. And, you know, he'll take you there.
We do all those things that they say you should never do. Like call attention to your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you're trying to, the old thing was, oh, hopefully nobody saw that. I remember Grant Hill sat in one night for Chuck and Kenny, and I think Shaq was there, Kenny, Shaq, me, and Grant Hill. And Grant's getting ready right before pregame, and he's like the clerk at a hardware store. He takes his pen and puts it behind his ear because he was looking at something and left it there and forgotten. We came on the air.
Yep.
And I was like, on the cough switch to the control room, and I said, like a Grant, Hill's ear. And so when we come on, hey, Ernie, I'm here. Shag's here. Kenny's here. Well, look at Grant Hill sitting in and looking. What a fashion statement with the big pen over the right ear. You know, and it's like other places, like, quick, tell Grant, get the pen off.
Yeah.
The stage manager, get the pen off. Somebody spills something, you know, Charles spills something on his jacket. It's the first thing we do. You know, we come on their air and boom, here's a tight shot of the, what is that? And we'll pull out. Oh, grease stain from the tacos tonight.
Chinese food.
Yeah, you know. That's what we live for. We live for just throwing each other. I mean, it's four guys in a living room.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Underhill's made a living being on the show only because, you know, in the old days, you would run a shot sheet out the last second. And it had to be, you know, there would be some poor stiff crawling on the ground, you know, so he was never seen. And I'm like, again, I stole the idea, but I think it was Letterman, but why are we hiding that? Like, what's the problem? In fact, isn't it kind of interesting to let people know how it actually works? So I'd say to Joe, if you get it late, walk on the set. And then as soon as Joe walks on the set, Chuck starts yelling at him like he's an intruder, you know, and all of a sudden, and then you get this bit out of it, you know, and then.
He's become, you know, it's like, we're talking about something and Charles says something crazy. It's like, you know, we look to the heaven, Underdog.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Right.
Did he really average that in 87? And then it's like 30 seconds later, as we continue to think, then it's like, Underdog says, no, you didn't. You average 25.
Right.
Well, it was close. You know, we had one of those the other night when he's talking about the Warriors, and he's always wanting to say, the Warriors were behind in every series that year they won the championship. Said, no, they weren't. Yes, they were. No, they weren't. Yes, they were. Underdog. They trailed Memphis 2-1. That was it. So.
Yeah, Underdog's in your Google.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But why not show it? That was my whole thing.
So there you have it. Thanks for joining us for this very special edition of the Steam Room presented by Tissot. And by the way, Tissot is the official watch of the NBA. Make sure to catch the inside story presented by Kia this weekend on TNT. Friday and Saturday night, 9 o'clock Eastern, and Sunday right after the All-Star game.